Thank you. Hi, good morning. I'm so excited to be up here again. They let me back. Good news. So most of you guys know I'm moving to Australia, and pretty soon. I'm moving in about 11 days, maybe 11, 12 days. Yeah, that means I have one more Sunday here. Yeah, it's come up pretty quickly. And so when it comes to moving, I know I'm not the only one here to have ever moved before in my entire life, but I'm sure you guys have as well. But there's a lot that goes into moving, right? Because you have to consider packing and storage and setting a travel notice with your bank account. But also something that comes along with moving is reflecting. I've spent a lot of time just like sitting down and contemplating and thinking about the past and like praying into the future and just really trying to be present in the journey that the Lord has for me. And even today, when we live walking distance from Hidden House, and I went there and got coffee, and I was just sitting there like, oh my gosh, this is like maybe my 11th time from the last time that I get to be here, because I plan on going there every day. But it's just like so just, I guess, like sobering of just like walking and realizing, wow, I have a limited amount of time here. And I've just spent a lot of time reflecting, and it's been good. And there is this very real recognition of things that I cherish. And in a sense, I'm stepping away from that. When it comes to community and family, like things that I just hold so dear to me, it's something that I'm going to be a part of. I pray that I get that while I'm over there, but I realize how good it is, and I'm not leaving for the sake of leaving, but leaving because I feel like the Lord's calling me there, and it's a sacrifice that I'm having to give up, and I'm looking at my sister almost in tears right now. It's not easy, but it is so, so worth it, because I know that I have Jesus and he's going to be over there with me and I get to do this with him. And that's the only reason I would go. And so most of you guys know that I was in Australia 3 times last year. I don't think it was planned to be that many, but it just kind of happened. And we would go and we'd get back and we're like, okay, we're going again in 3 months. Okay, we're going again. But the last time I went was October 2018, and that's kind of, I feel like, when the Lord kind of made it clear of, oh, you're supposed to move here a lot sooner than you realized, Amber, so let's do that. I'd like to talk about that for a little bit. Tabitha and I went in December of 2017, and we were going and meeting with people, and we were like asking them, hey, what's your ministry like? What are you doing? How can we encourage you right now and right here? And if we were to bring back a team of people, how could we partner along with what the Lord's doing in you guys? And we sat with them and had really awesome conversations, and in June, we were able to bring a team of 7 people back, and it was incredible. We got to go into different schools and sit and talk with the kids and share our testimonies about how the Lord's transformed our lives, and we got to share those moments with them. And there is one day in particular where Jared shared a story, and then 2 girls, like Hannah and Tabitha, were able to sit with them, and they gave their lives to the Lord that day. And then the next day, Tabitha sat with a girl, I think Hannah too, and she gave her life to the Lord. So we just saw like really incredible things happening. And when you're with someone who decides, oh, Jesus is the one and this is what I've been missing, it's kind of inexpressible. And we got to experience that together. And the teacher who was at that school had been dedicating her life to that. She didn't want to be a teacher, but the Lord called her to that. So she's like, okay, Lord, this is what you have me doing, and I'm going to do it. And so she's put time and energy and prayer into investing into these kids and to see them, to see some fruit from that. She was so stoked. And like me, she's kind of a dreamer. So she'll, like, just when a dream pops up, she'll, like, say it. And so when that happened, like, after the kids had left, the team and her, we and I, we were together and we were praying, and she's like, I want you guys to come back. and you guys should come back. We're having a camp in October. You guys should come back to that. And this is in June. We're like, okay, you have no idea how much it takes to get over there. But I can't remember what day that was, but a few days later, we were on the bus, and Brad was like, so Amber, like, what have you been dreaming about, like, coming back? What are you thinking? And I was like, oh my gosh, Brad, I'm trying to think of what I'm going to feed you guys for dinner tonight. I haven't thought that far. But I'm just... Brad's a dreamer. His son Ian's a dreamer. Ian helps me plan VBS, which is really cool. So... I'm very thankful that you are a dreamer, because at the airport, on the way back, Brad pulled Troy and I aside, and he was like, I want you guys to consider going back. And so the crazy thing, so this is behind the scenes of all the mission trips. When we stepped onto that plane in June, we were in debt, because we had bought our plane tickets on credit cards, so we owed thousands of dollars that we still had to pay off. And I say this as, like, the servant leader of the trip, and I, if I were to do that again, I wouldn't do that. But that's what happened. We're like, the Lord's calling us to go, and this is a resource that we have, and so we're going to do this. But that was a burden that I carried when we stepped onto that plane, and it was like, okay, Lord, I trust that this is going to work out, because this is what you've called us to. And so when we're at the airport leaving, it's like, okay, we still have to pay off this trip, let alone come back in like 3 months. But a few days later, we're, like, going over the numbers, and I had given everybody, like, a $420 budget for food for the 2 weeks while we were there, and I was like, anything that you don't spend on food, you get to spend paying off your plane ticket. And I don't know how, but Troy had spent, like, less than $120 on food for 2 weeks. But I'm pretty sure that's because the team members bought it. But, yeah, everybody did so good with their budgeting, and we were so, so taken care of. The Lord showed up in ways that we weren't expecting. And from my last sermon, you know, yeah, he does that, specifically with avocados, sometimes with money. But... Yeah, he showed up, and it was so good, and we had money left over, so everything was able to pay off. We were able to pay off all the plane tickets, and we had money left over for Troy and I to go on another trip, so we were like, okay, we'll just, like, raise $500 more, and we're going to do this. And so it was just a 24-hour turnaround of getting those numbers back, and then Troy and I, like, okay, yeah, we'll do this. And then meeting with Brad and buying the plane tickets. And so we went back in October, and that's how that happened. So she had invited us back to a camp. And so Troy and I, we had been meeting, like, every week, like, planning for this, because that's what you do in mission trips. You, like, invest, and you put time in, and you pray, and you just center your hearts for what the Lord is going to do, and you let him chip away the stuff that needs to be chipped away. And so... we were meeting and doing that. We had to apply to be leaders for the camp. And so we met and we did the application together. But it didn't dawn on us exactly what we signed up for until the Sunday that we were there in Australia, in the forest, in a room, sitting to get training for the camp. And we, like, looked at each other across the room, and we're both holding coffees that were, like, the instant coffee. As we were getting training and realizing that we're with junior hires and high schoolers for, like, 7 days, and we can't leave, so we're drinking our fake coffee. We're like, oh, this is what we signed up for. And it became really real. But, yeah, really quick. It was so, so good. I love that time there, because I got to be, like, a youth leader for kids. And it was 24-7, 24-9. When you're living with kids, it's 24-9, not 24-7. We were all in a cabin together, and then there was a leader cabin. So all the girl leaders, we had, like, bunk beds together. They're really big animals and bugs that I saw, and I hate bugs. But that was a tangent that I didn't need to say. And so my co-leader and I, we had a group of seventh grade girls, and they were just like this ragtag team of girls. Some of them were like, whoa. But throughout the week, we started building relationships with them. And one of the really, really cool parts was we had a structure, a schedule of the day, and there was always moments of worship that we would have. And it was really cool seeing the progression of worship, because you have these girls who are like, Jesus, who? Like, question mark, I don't know. And you see them at the beginning, like, okay, everybody's singing, this is kind of weird. And then at the end of the week, their hands were in the air, and they're, like, jumping, and they're looking at me, like, Amber, we're praising Jesus. I'm like, that's so good. Praise Him. And it was so, so cool seeing the progression of that, and just the abandonment of, like, their, I guess for lack of better words, their dignity for, like, okay, I'm all out. I don't care if this is weird. I thought this was weird, but this is for Jesus, and I'm starting to understand more of who He is, and it's worth it. And so the Lord totally did something in my heart that week of just breaking it down for these girls. The way that I described it when I got back was like, I felt like the Grinch, like my heart grew 3 times. and it was for these girls. And so part of the trip, a discipline that the Lord had me working through, was not waiting for the other foot to drop, because the year prior I'd went through a lot of really hard things. And so it was just my reflex to build up walls and to guard myself from being hurt, because when there's a good thing, it can be taken away and there's nothing that I can do about it. And the Lord was like, no, I want you to be so present in this. If it's good, it's good. Let's write it out. Don't wait for the other foot to drop. That's not your job. This isn't your job description right now, Amber. Don't put walls up. Don't guard yourself. Don't wait for the other foot to drop. We're in this, okay? And it was hard. And every free moment I got, I was running to my room and reading my Bible and spending time in worship, because I needed Him to get through that, because it was really hard as your heart's developing for people. And there was one day during the trip, it was like a Wednesday, and it was late at night. So we had like 17-hour days with these kids. So I was with a different group and Troy was with another group. So we had went a few days without even really talking to each other. So one day we're like, okay, we'll like debrief for an hour after it all. And so as we're walking back to our cabins from that, we see this kid who was just like sitting on the ground with a bunch of leaders, and an ambulance is coming up. And we find out that he had been having hallucinations. And he had been hearing voices that were telling him, like, not to do nice things, and he was just being tormented. And that was just so hard to wrestle with as we sit there and we're praying for him, we're praying for the leaders, and it just, like, arose a lot of things in me of, God, I'm 21 years old. I've never had to deal with anything like this in my entire life. And I was born to a really beautiful family in Orange County. I've had a lot of opportunity, and I've not had to struggle the way that this kid has had to struggle. He's 16 years old. He's seen some of his friends get killed, get incarcerated. His mom left him when he was younger, and his dad doesn't care to be in the picture. And so I was really wrestling with, how is that fair? How are some people, how do they have to go through something and other people are like privileged, and what do we do, and how do I reconcile this, and how do I get 7 hours of sleep? And it was just really, really hard. And in the morning, we're all like having our debrief with the leaders, and the camp director said, when pain comes in the night, joy comes in the morning. And that was her answer to that. And I've had that verse spoken over me in a very, I guess, time in my life when I needed it, and it just sprung me into a season of joy. And I'm talking about the joy when your phone drops in the ocean, and you gash your knee open, and it's only 7 in the morning, but you're like, oh, who wants donuts? It's on me. Jesus is so good. Like that type of joy where, like, nothing phases you. But in that moment, when I was there in the camp, in that room with the leaders, I was wrestling so hard, because it's like, how can you say that when this kid's in the hospital by himself? Nobody's there, and we can't be there because we have to be with these kids. And there were some leaders who had stayed with him till 3 in the morning until I think his dad was finally able to come. But it's like, how do we sit there saying that? How do we sit there and be joyful in worship knowing that somebody is suffering like this? That was so, so hard for me. And within the next few, and that was something that I had to wrestle with, and it wasn't easy, but I had to wrestle with it. And a few days later, we were back in the room, and we were worshiping, and my girls were up, and they were doing some sort of, like, karaoke thing in front of everyone, and they were singing and dancing, And I was like, oh my gosh, so beautiful. I don't want you guys to get hurt ever in your life. I don't want you to have a heartbreak. I don't want you to get in a car accident. I don't want you to lose anyone close to you. And I like walked out the room crying, knowing like bad things happen, but I don't want it to happen. There's so much beauty in the world, but there's so much pain and evil because we live in a fallen, broken world. And I don't want that for you guys. And so that was really hard. But the Lord did reconcile that for me, and I would love to share how, but at the end, so wait for it. Okay, so this morning I would like to talk about the Lord's faithfulness through suffering. So, like I mentioned earlier, I'm moving, and when you're in like a pivotal moment of your life, so you guys are about to graduate and everybody comes up to you like, hey, you guys are, but what are the questions they ask you? Tabitha said I couldn't call her up because she's in the children's ministry. So just a little tangent. Tabitha and I were hanging out and we were like comparing our calendars of when can we hang out? When can we do this? And she was like, okay, you're preaching that day. Well, I'm in the kids, so you can't call me out anymore. So can you go get her? Just kidding. Just kidding. Just kidding. I'll call you guys out. So what are some of the questions that people have been asking you? I'm like, oh, you're graduating. What are you going to do next? What are you going to do with your life? You just spent so much money getting this education. What are you going to do with it? Right? And it's like you build a script in your head. You're answering the same thing over and over. And I remember graduating high school, and that was what people asked me. And I hated it so, so much. But, yeah, so that's what's been happening is I'm preparing to move because people have, like, this expectation of, oh, you're moving, you're getting to travel, how fun, Australia, that's beautiful, it's tropical, they have, like, really pretty water, but there's a lot of, like, animals, so they have this, like, expectation of what it's going to be like, and like, oh my gosh, how fun, and yes, it is fun, and I am excited, but I've counted the cost of what I'm giving up for this. And the journey wasn't just 6 months ago. It wasn't a 6 month turnaround. This has been something that I truly feel the Lord's been preparing me for a while. And I'd like to share about that calling moment that I had with him because it's a cool story that I get to sit and talk with the kids about. So it'd be cool, the kids in Australia that I'll be working with. So it'd be cool to kind of share that with you guys. So I grew up with a disease called sickle cell anemia, and that's kept me from doing a lot of things because it causes pain crises. And so it's also anemia, so there's a lack of oxygen, so I can't really go in the mountains or exert too much energy because I'm anemic. I can't do that. But there was this year in my life where I didn't have any crises, and it happened through some prayer. And my parents, who are right there, see that, guys, they let me go on my first missions trip, and I went to Mexico. And so if, like, our campgrounds were here, like, these were our tents, the bathrooms are probably close to the fence, so you had to go to the bathrooms with a partner. And so I've lived in Orange County my whole life. I grew up in Buena Park near Knott's Berry Farm. There's a ton of light pollution in Orange County, so I'd never seen the stars, really seen the stars before, until I was, like, 16 years old at this ranch in Mexico one night. And my friend Danny was telling me about, like, all the shooting stars he's seen, and I was like, what? I've never seen a shooting star. Those are real. And he was like, yeah, and you know, when you see a shooting star, it's not just a coincidence. It's God moving the celestial heavens. And I was like, what? I want to see that. Like, and you've gotten to see what? Not two, three of them? Oh, I want to see that. And so every single night, I was there for about like 10 days, I was praying, and I would go out like, Lord, I want to see a shooting star move the celestial heavens for me. And I had given my life to the Lord when I was 4 years old in kindergarten. I remember standing up on my chair and like, yeah, Jesus, yeah. And so I've been so fortunate to have walked with the Lord and just had his hand over my life. And so here I was kind of getting to learn more about him at 16 years old, and I wanted him. And so every single night I would go and I'd pray to see a shooting star. And I, in the daytimes, we were going and we were helping build a house and we were doing ministry in the streets. And there is one night when we were doing worship at the end, and I just remember looking around to a room of a few hundred kids who were my age who had given up their winter break to be in Mexico to serve Jesus. And I looked to my left and my friend Harry is just like giving it all to the Lord. And it just became so real of like, oh, we're doing this for something. God is real and he's here and we have access to him. And I dropped on my knees and I prayed, Lord, kill my flesh, fill me with your spirit. And there became nothing I wanted more than to be where the Lord had me. Danny comes over to me and he's like, Amber, I feel like the Lord's like wants to tell you something. And this has never happened to me before. I was like, what? And he was like, the Lord wants you to know that you are his princess. You are his beautiful daughter and you are his shooting star. And I just lost it. Everything, my tears, snot was going into Danny's jacket. I was just a wreck. Because a shooting star that week had just become something that was so, so special to me. It was like God moving the celestial heavens. It was something special that not everybody got to like take part of, and it was just held in such a high regard, and to know that the Lord felt that way about me was so crazy. And that was the moment that changed my life. And through that trip, I was praying, and I was 16. I was a junior in high school, and I was going to go to the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising. My mom and I had went to like the admissions, and the lady, I was kind of on track of getting a scholarship, and that was my plan. But while I was there, I realized, oh, there's nothing. I want more to be doing what you have for me, Lord. And one night, I was walking out with my friend to one of the restrooms, and I was praying, like, okay, God, like, do you want me to do full-time missions? Is this what you're calling me to? And then I saw a shooting star, and I almost tripped. My first shooting star, and I just felt the Lord saying, as that star went across the earth, so will you. And so that was my calling, and I've not turned back since then. And so that's just been a cool way that I feel like the Lord's been able to communicate with me. And so 16 years old, and just like, all right, Jesus, this is it. This is us. We're doing this. And I realized the closer that I got to the Lord and the more stride I put in my walk with him, the bigger the target got on my back, the more I started feeling attacks from the enemy. That year, I ended up in the hospital 7 times in pain crises from sickle cell. It was not easy, and there was a lot of wrestling and struggling. But so one of those times happened when my church was having a summer camp. So Mexico happened in the winter, and then my church was having a summer camp, and I kind of felt the Lord saying, Amber, you're supposed to go on this camp. And so I like talked to my parents about it, and my loving parents didn't want to see me in pain. They're like, Amber, it's in the mountains. Like, you can't do that. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I feel like I should. I'm 16. I can do it. And so they ended up letting me go. And while I was there, I remember on the bus on the way over, one of the girls who was leading worship, she was about my age, she was having like stomach pain, and I had started falling in love with my Bible and just reading it, and I was like, oh my gosh, like the Lord gives us power to like pray and heal those things. And so she was talking about her stomach pain, and I was like, oh, can I pray for you? And she's like, yeah. So I like prayed for her, and her stomach pains were gone, and the Lord was just doing like these crazy things, and I was getting to see like the power of his kingdom during that trip. And we had free time, and people were playing volleyball, and I love volleyball, but I was in the mountains, so I couldn't exert any physical, like, energy, so I was helping in the kitchen, and all of a sudden, my back started hurting. I got in a pain crisis. I was in a lot of pain, and I just tried to, like, push through it that day. I think I took some, like, ibuprofen, and that night, when we all went to bed, I was in bed, but I could not fall asleep. I was in so much pain. I couldn't have fallen asleep. And so I went to the cabin where all the pastors were staying, and excuse me, one of the pastors, so I was in a lot of pain, and one of the pastors told somebody, hey, like, read Isaiah 53, and so I'll read it to you guys right now. Isaiah 53, 1-7. Who has believed what he has heard from us, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he grew up before him like a young plant and like a root out of dry ground. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him, and no beauty that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And as one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrow. Yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. And with his wounds we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. Like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, and like a sheep that before its shearers is silent, so he opened not his mouth. And I was crying because of the pain, but also crying because it just, there was this real a revelation of, oh, Jesus, you walked along this earth. You felt sadness. You felt depression. Nobody esteemed you. Even now, to this day, we do that to the Lord. But it just became so real to me as I was sitting there. And not only did he go through all that, but he went through all that so that he could go on the cross and take our sins and heal me from what I'm going through. And I had heard the verse, he was wounded for our transgressions. I had heard it, but not in that context of what the Lord went through. And that was a pivotal moment for me in building a relationship with the Lord of like, oh, he's in this with me. And so I ended up going to the hospital that day, the next day in the mountains, but I was able to be released. So they give me like an IV and like some heavy narcotics, and then they like sent me back. And so I went in and they were all worshiping. So I went into worship and I was just, yeah, praising the Lord. Lord, thank you so much. I'm not in the hospital with an oxygen and with an IV. Thank you that I'm here able to praise you right now. And I felt the Lord say, hey, Amber, the devil wants you dead, but you're here because I have you here. And it became clear to me then that I'm on a journey of borrowed time. Like, my life has had a claim out for itself, but I truly believe that I'm here because the Lord has me here. And 16, 17 years old, I started to realize that and walk in that. And so that was high school. And then I went to Vanguard, and it was incredible, and I met a lot of really amazing people, and Adam was one of my professors, and so I started coming here. And I remember one sermon very in particular where Nick Bonner was preaching, and he did the "We Are Farmers." And then at the end of the service, so that was the beginning, and at the end of his sermon, he passed around a seed. Do you guys remember that? Yeah, because he made us swallow them. I mean, I was always told as a child, if you swallow a seed, like a watermelon's going to grow in your belly. Yeah. Yeah. So you're swallowing a seed, like, okay, Jesus. But he had to swallow the seed to signify that the Lord's doing something new to us. And it starts out as a seed, and it takes root, and it grows. And I remember going back to my dorm room that day, and I just remember, like, just feeling so weird and uncomfortable and just, like, wrestling with something that I didn't even know what I was wrestling with. And I was like, Lord, what's going on? He's like, oh, like, I'm doing something new in you, and you feel it. It's starting to take root. Like, this is what it feels like. And I was like, oh, it's weird. That year, I was an RA, and the verse that I had prayed over my floor was Isaiah 43, and it was just, I felt like just the vision that I wanted for the girls on that floor, but the Lord ended up using it for me, which he does that to us sometimes. But it's Isaiah 43:18-19, and I'll read it to you guys. Remember not the former things, nor consider the things of old. Behold, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs forth. Do you not perceive it? I will make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. And so this began a journey in my life. So my resident right here remembers that. the theme of our floor was rivers in the wasteland. And there was a meeting that we had with all the RAs and RDs, and they were talking about our floors and our floor's theme, and somebody was like, whose floor theme is trash? That would be me. It wasn't trash, it was rivers in the wasteland. So it was just the motif of the desert, but there being a river, because God, so there's a lot of dead things on the floor. Anyways. I just remember going through a lot. I remember one day walking and praying to the Lord, and I said, Lord, I feel like my life is like this field of flowers, and every different aspect represents a different flower. And they're so beautiful. They're blossoming, they're blooming, but why are you pulling them up? It hurts so bad, because a lot of different areas in my life were just under the fire. My friendships, there was a guy that I liked, and he liked me, but then he didn't like me, and it was just like, oh my gosh, my 17, 18-year-old soul cannot handle all this. And on top of that, on top of having sickle cell anemia, I was diagnosed with a new disease that I found out sophomore year. It was called thrombocytopenia, so it was something to do with my red blood cells, because they've been treating my sickle cell with chemotherapy, and the chemotherapy started to affect my levels, and so I was going through a lot. And I remember one day sitting, praying in worship, and like, Lord, this is the hardest thing I'll ever have to go through, and once I get over this, everything is just smooth sailing, right, Lord? Right? It wasn't. But at that time, it was. And the Lord told me, oh, yeah, like your life, we can use that, Amber. It's flowers. But I'm pruning you. I'm pruning the vine. And these things are bearing fruit, but they're gonna bear more fruit once I'm done. I'm pruning. I'm taking away the things that don't need to be. And I was just on this journey where I just felt like the Lord was shaking me, and all the things that I held dear, my health, my friendships, relationships, different things were just being like taken away from me. And it hurt so, so bad. But the Lord's like, oh, you just need me. Like, you just need me. And so that led into this season of being pruned and learning how to abide in him. And so it was really hard, but I pushed in, and there was a lot of drives where I'd just go at night and just drive, and I would pray and cry and pull over because I couldn't see because I was crying. But there is just such a sweetness in knowing that no matter how hard it is, I get to be with the Lord in this, and he cares. And I spent a lot of that time in that hardness just crying out to the Lord and praying, because I truly believe that he does listen and he does answer prayers. And yeah, he was just like, just seek me. And so as much as it hurt, it was this beautiful journey of becoming more intimate with the Lord in those ways. And then life got good. Life was good, and it was just the hillsides were blossoming with joy. That was my theme for my floor next year, because it was good. And then it happened again. The hardship. Last January, there were 10 days where my life completely flipped upside down, and I think I've shared a bit about it before, but my best friend was like, hey, I don't think I can be friends with you. And my aunt, my godmother, got diagnosed with cancer, and the guy who I was like head over heels with, we were dating, and he broke up with me just like out of nowhere. And 3 days later, I got into a car accident. And this is all within a 10-day span. And so the day that after I get out of the car accident, I was in the hospital, and I'm back in my apartment. And the car accident was really bad, and I knew that I should have been dead. But I'm just sitting there, and I'm alone. And I was like, Lord, I should have been dead. Like, why am I here? And I sat in my apartment, like, contemplating that. And Allie came over, and she sat with me in that. And I really appreciate that. One thing that I've been very thankful for is that through it all, I've had the Lord, and I've had prayer, and I've had a community who's been there to sit with me. And if I can be so, so honest with you guys, that's one of the reasons why it's so hard for me to, like, go over there. It's easy because of Jesus, but I realize that I have an amazing community here that I cherish so much. Yeah. Remember that. Well, you guys are all here with each other. Yeah, send me pictures. And then Photoshop me in. Tell Tabitha to Photoshop me in. Okay, so I was going through this, and this is happening my last semester of college. The semester before, my health started acting up again. I got a letter in my mailbox at school on my way to class one day that said, "Your spleen and your liver are failing." And I was like, okay. And I go and I sit down in class. My professor's talking and I'm just in class. Spiritual disciplines. And so Dr. has you do like different spiritual disciplines every week. And that was the day that I decided to do my silent retreat. So I'm like in class and I'm finding this news just like in silence. Like, oh, okay, this is a funny one, God. So needless to say, I spent a lot of time at the doctor's, anywhere between like 2 to 8 hours, on top of going to school, on top of working, and I was in SGA and just all of these things. And I ended up, having to cut back, but my grades suffered from that. And I failed some of my classes because of that. And so my teachers were very gracious to me because, Marquita knows, I was going through a lot of health stuff. And they looked over the records and they're like, wow, yeah, it like your grades have been pretty consistent. Thank you. Thanks. Your grades have been very consistent until this last semester, so it's obvious that something's going on. So they were kind enough to let me redo those classes, and so I redid those classes my senior year, the last year. So on top of like the 18 units I was already taking, I was taking another course, and I can't even remember how many, on top of working. And that was the semester of those 10 days. So there was a lot that I was processing and dealing with. And one day in class, I just kind of like lost it. And I was crying and just trying to reconcile what was going on. And I was starting to feel like the Lord was calling me into missions. And on a break, I went and I read 2 Corinthians. So I want to read 2 Corinthians 4, 7 through 18 to you guys. "But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us. We are afflicted in every way but not crushed, perplexed but not driven to despair, persecuted but not forsaken, struck down but not destroyed. Always carrying in the body the death of Jesus so that the life of Jesus may also be manifested in our bodies. For we who live are always being given over to the death for Jesus' sake, so that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our mortal flesh. So death is at work in us, but life in you. Since we have the same spirit of faith, according to what has been written, 'I believed, and so I spoke,' we also believe, and so we also speak, knowing that he who raised the Lord Jesus will raise us also with Jesus and bring you into his presence. For it is all for your sake, so that as the grace extends to more and more people, it may increase thanksgiving to the glory of God. So we do not lose heart. Though our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. For this light, momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison." And so I sit there in the shambles that my life is in. I was sitting in that thinking, okay, I want to be a missionary, but how can I do that? I don't have good health. My life is falling apart. And it just became very clear that the Lord never asked us to have our life all together in order to do ministry. And that I was able to do that in my brokenness. And 2 Corinthians, this was written to the church in Corinth, and they were known for their pottery. They were known for the clay that they made because they lived on like an isthmus, a peninsula, so the water and the sand and blah, 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 however you make clay. this would have been very real to them of, oh, we're a clay jar. This is what our economy is based off of. And the thing about clay jars is that they're very, very fragile. If you break a clay jar, you can't put it back together. You can't mend it. It's just broken. And the Lord chooses to use this motif to reveal himself in, we carry this treasure in fragile clay jars. We carry the treasure. We carry this kingdom of heaven. We carry the death and resurrection and life of Jesus in us, in our shambles, in this mess. And the only thing that is keeping this clay jar from breaking is the thing that's inside of it. He's sustaining us, and he's in us, and he's allowing us to be a part of his kingdom and participate with him, even in the mess. And so instead of wanting to get my life together, the Lord pulled me on this journey of walking in my callness and weakness. And it became clear, like, oh, he's sending us out as sheep among wolves. I'm not asked to have it all together. I'm not asked to be a strong pillar, because in my weakness, he is made strong. And he is so, so clear that he's not asking anything more than for us to just be present and to keep going in the weakness and keep leaning into him. And I want to share all this to encourage you all to let your trials push you closer to Jesus. When I think back to the first round of, oh my gosh, this is the hardest moment of my entire life, I was able to take my girls on a trip to the Grand Canyon. And I had never been to the Grand Canyon before. And when I get there, I'm sitting and looking at the vast openness and just praying. And the Lord just speaks to me for, I'll read it, Romans 8:17. Okay. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God and fellow heirs of Christ, provided we suffer with him in order that we may also be glorified with him. For I consider that the present sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed in us. And that's been something that's been able to help me in this. Of, oh yeah, I'm going through it. The target's pretty big on my back. There's a lot of trials. But all of this, the pain, the trials, the suffering that I'm feeling, it can't compare to the glory that's ahead. And I'm trusting that glory is Jesus, because that's what the Bible tells me. And so I just have to keep pushing along, even in my weakness. He's making himself strong. Even all of our weaknesses and our suffering and the hardship, the Lord is making us strong, and he's sustaining us. And every single one of you in this room are here because the Lord's sustaining you, and he wants you here in this room, and you have a work to do. And while we're in this, Jesus is interceding for us. He's not leaving us alone. He is at the ear of the Father praying for us. He's on our side. He's with us in this. And we have our own ability to pray. And it kind of feels transactional. I don't want to use the term investment, but we get to pray and we get to see things happen. We get to see things take root because God is with us in this, and we get to be a part of his kingdom. And so we get to pray and ask him for things, and he answers and he shows up in that. And we also have community. We are able to be there for each other and be the voice of the Lord during those times. And all of those things have helped me trudge through the hard times. And so I'd encourage you guys not to lose those things, or not to take advantage or forsake those things, but to hold them very close and very dear to you. And after you have suffered for a little while, the God of all grace, who has called you to his eternal glory in Christ, will himself restore you, secure you, strengthen you, and establish you. And that's 1 Peter 5:10. So I want to go back to the camp in October. So we were there, we were going through that, and I was praying, and I read through 1 Peter, and it was still kind of hard for me, but we left the camp, and we went to a church weekend away. We were there with EV Church, and we were a little bit late getting to the weekend away. It was like their church retreat. And as soon as we get there, they just like push us into a Bible study group. There's a pole right here. Be careful. Don't trip on that. So We were at Galston Gorge, so we're in this beautiful little canyon, and there was this river that went through, and we were in a building right next to it, so we just overlooked it, and you're just surrounded by trees and the water, and it was so pretty. So we pull our seats up next to the balcony overlooking the water. I'm like, okay, we're talking about the cross today. Open up to Isaiah 53. Who has believed what he has heard from us, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he grew up before him like a young plant and like a root out of dry ground. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him, and no beauty that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And as one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions, he was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. All we like sheep have gone astray, we have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet opened not his mouth, like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, and like a sheep that is before its shearers is silent, so he opened not his mouth. And so I sit there wrestling with what I was wrestling with of, Lord, I've been given so much opportunity, but this kid is suffering. And the Lord just gently reminded me, I suffered too. I suffered too. I went through it. Imagine how big the target was on his back. And he did it to be with us, to relate with us. He went through all of that because he cares about you so much. And he was willing to move heaven and earth and go through the gates of hell for you. And he was there with that kid in the hospital. And he was there with me through it. And so I'm not alone in this. And then all of a sudden, it starts pouring rain as we're reading. And a rainbow goes across the river. And the Lord was just so clear. Remember my promises. And the answers to his promises are yes and amen. So yeah, there's going to be trials and there's going to be pain. And there's going to be suffering. But I've realized that I love you guys so much that I don't want to protect you from the suffering. I love you guys so much. I want to see Jesus in you through that suffering. He took that suffering first. And he is with us through this. He's not forsaken us. And the suffering that we're experiencing can't compare to the joy that's ahead. And it is my heart for you guys as a community to experience the fullness of God, to experience his amazing love, his love that subjects himself to this in order to be with you. Not only to save us from our sins, but also to come and have relationship with us. Also so that when we're walking and the sun is setting and you see the different gradients of green in the tree and the Lord's like, I'm here. When you see like a hummingbird or a butterfly or you go to the ocean, the Lord's like, I'm here. And I'm here for you. So not only did he take on the suffering first and he went through this death, but we go through that death too. And the Lord's death and resurrection is making itself out in us. And we feel that. And sometimes it feels weird. We're on our floor like, Lord, what's going on? His death and resurrection is making itself out in you. But trust that the power of the kingdom is in you. So don't lose heart. We are fragile clay jars. But we have the power of heaven sustaining us. Yeah. I'll pray for you guys. Lord, thank you for meeting us in the mire. Thank you for meeting us in our lowest lows and being with us in our highest highs. Everything about us, we want it to point towards you, Lord. You have been so good and you've revealed yourself to us, and we want to see that in the world. So as we're going and doing what we're doing and doing what you called us to, let us be obedient in making disciples, even in our weakness, Lord. And I just pray right now that you would reveal yourself to these people. Would we understand more of your love and more of what you've called us to? Would we put aside ourselves for the sake of you? Lord, there's so much goodness in you. I've tasted and seen that you are good, and I pray the same for this congregation, that no matter what we're going through, we are just running. We've set aside the weights, and we're running towards you, Lord. Would you always be there to reconcile things for us? In Jesus' name, amen.
So, guys, we're going to continue with some worship. And I think it's really important.